Hi, friends. Well, as promised, we told you we would come back and give you updates on the Air India 171 incident, an accident, that tragedy over in India. When new information came out or we needed to update or refine something, and so we're going to update and refine in this third installment in what we've been talking about. And my inbox has been absolutely blowing up with pilots and everybody wanting me to discuss one certain item, and we'll get to that before the end of the video for sure. But let's do a review of what we know for certain happened in this tragic accident over in India. What we know for sure is this: that airplane achieved lift, right? It rotate. We saw it rotate off the ground and get airborne. And it seemed as though the engines were producing full or close to full thrust when it rotated and the nose and the main mount wheels lifted off the ground. Shortly after that, within seconds, it appears that the wings lost lift. Now, we talked initially in the first video about things that could produce a loss of lift in the wings. One would be a dual engine failure. The other would be a reconfiguration of the wings. And that fell into two categories. The airplane took off with no flaps, which was just preposterous. It's virtually impossible to do that in these modern jets. And the other was an inadvertent mistake by one of the pilots where they might have prematurely raise the flaps. I'm glad to say at this point that that has been put to bed. That did not happen. A lot of people say, well, you were casting dispersions on those pilots or their training or their background. Not at all. I have the greatest and utmost respect for all of my foreign pilot friends. These guys are absolutely geniuses. They are terrific at what they do. They got great training, sometimes better than the training I get, and they do everything they do in a second language. The international language of aviation is English. That's my first tongue. That's their second tongue. They do all of that in a separate language. My hat is off to them. They do an incredible job. So don't go down the road if I was casting dispersion on those two pilots. Those guys were earned where they were, and they did a valiant job of trying to save that airplane. They were really the heroes, and I wish it had turned out better, right? Because hats off to both of those pilots. Now, so that one has been put to bed. Now, last video, we got into some things that are the hard and fast that we know. What do we know so far for certain about this accident? We know that the RAT deployed. What's the RAT? That's the ram air turbine. That is a little mechanism that in a case of extreme emergency will drop down out of the bottom, the fuselage of the airplane. It's towards the right back on a 787, right at the back of the wings where the kind of the flaps come out, but it's in the fuselage. It's there as a last resort to provide some electricity and enough hydraulic pressure to fly the airplane. It's really designed to deploy in case there's a dual engine failure at altitude. So let's say you're at 35,000 feet and both engines flame out for some reason, and you can still glide someplace, but you've lost all electric and all hydraulic, and maybe your APU is not working to give you electric. That RAT will automatically deploy. You can push a button to deploy it, but it'll deploy automatically. It's wired to do that. It'll drop out. It'll bang real hard when it comes out, and it'll take over some electric in the airplane and enough hydraulic to get that airplane to fly. It was not designed to provide any sort of help at 400 feet for an engine for wings that are losing lift due to either a loss of thrust or some other potential reason. So these guys were doomed when it happened. The RAT fell out, came out, and we've got hard evidence of that. We showed you a video last time with a picture of the RAT actually out deployed underneath the airplane. We also showed you listened to the audio as the airplane flew by the open window of the guy who was filming. You can hear that high-pitched propeller sound going by. That's a distinct sound of a RAT. The third is the eyewitness testimony of the one lone survivor. Unbelievable, billion to one that guy survived. The one lone survivor that walked away from the crash and said he had heard a loud bang and the lights flicker. Now that makes more sense if we connect it to the RAT, right? And then the final one was the captain making the mayday call, and he says something to the effect of thrust was not achieved. So he's telling us he doesn't have enough power to continue to fly. That would be indicative of either a single or a dual engine failure. So having said that, that's the hard evidence that we know so far and the facts to back it up. Now, what would cause potentially one engine or two engines to fail? Well, those big turbine engines out there basically are pretty simple operators. Once they get started and they get turning, they need air and they need fuel. And they need a constant flow of liquid fuel. Hold on to that word for a minute. Liquid, it's important. Liquid fuel, and they need an even steady flow of air. So now, one of the potential ways for an engine or engines to fail, and again, remember as we're discussing this, everything we're talking about falls into that category of 100 billion to one, because we're talking about both engines. If one engine had done any of the things that we've discussed so far, it might not even make the news. We might not even be talking about it, because a 787 can fly just fine on a single engine at all gross weights in all temperature conditions, even with the gear down. Right? And that's the other thing that we know from the video we've watched. The gear remained down the entire flight. Now, I did an interview yesterday with a guy named Gary, and Gary's a pilot. He's a really good guy. He's got a great YouTube channel. Gary B. Pilot is his YouTube channel. You can go check out that interview there. Throw some love Gary's way, because he took me to task on a couple things, and we had a nice frank hangar flying type conversation where we challenged each other on a couple of things. I love that. I love this forum, because hangar flying now for us has moved from sitting around a table inside a dingy dark building called a hangar, and it's now on social media. It's on YouTube. It's on channels like this and the other aviators that have their own channels talking about this. I think it's a necessary thing that we talk about and we throw out their possibilities. Some of those possibilities will be big P possibilities, and some will be small P possibilities. You be the judge on what I'm going to talk about next, whether it's a big P or a small P, or you want to throw it out altogether, that's up to you. But we're not going to shy away from having a discussion about it, because I think it's necessary. A, it makes people feel reassured that they can get into an airplane and they can do so safely, which I'm here to reassure you about 1,000 times over. I just got back from London today, all right? I rushed right over to the studio to get this out to you, so I'm a little on the tired side. But you know what? I'm going to Paris twice next month. I'm going to Munich once. I'm going to London once, and I'm going to Dublin once, and you're more than welcome to come with me. I think it's flying is absolutely safe. I can't say that enough. So here's the hard facts. It looks like, and a lot of people are coming to a consensus on, it looks like it was a dual engine failure. Now, the RAT will deploy for other reasons on a 787. It'll deploy for a major electrical failure, and it'll deploy for a major hydraulic failure. Those two things in and of themselves don't cause the engines to stop running. Here's what does cause the engine or engines to stop running. All right, it's either air or it's fuel. Let's talk about air first. That those jet engines need a steady stream of air coming into them. When it's hot, it bogs down a little bit. It complicates things coming into the engines. It was wicked hot in India that day. I've seen some METAR reports that it was 43 degrees Celsius. That's about 110 degrees, or just short of 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Now remember, the temperature is taken somewhere near the tower. When you taxi out to the runway, and if it's an asphalt runway, it's even hotter than that 43 degrees. So put a pin in that, because we'll come back to that discussion in a minute. So airflow, right? So now the air is flowing through the engines, and when that airplane rotates, is the airflow interrupted? No, it's just redirected a little bit. And was it sufficient enough redirection to cause something that's called a compressor stall? Certainly that is worthy of a discussion. I've had a lot of people ask me, was it a compressor stall? I don't know. It could have been a compressor stall. Compressor stalls generally don't cause an engine to fail. They're very distinctive, and you would generally see some evidence out the back of the engine, like rings of fire coming out. What happens with a compressor stall? The airflow is kind of interrupted through the engine, and it kind of almost like a backfiring in your car. It's not the same, but it sounds like a backfiring car. It goes bang, bang, bang. And the airplane would shudder real hard. We don't hear any of that in the audio. We didn't get any eyewitness from the ground. I mean, people far away would hear that bang, bang, bang. And if it was happening in both engines at the same time, you would really hear it. You might see flames coming out the back of the engines. And it's not necessarily that the engines would fail altogether. They would keep producing some thrust. All right, but that's a possibility. So that's the air side of things. Now, there are three things that could cause fuel starvation to an engine. Right. And as the same way we defined the airplane stop flying as the wings stop producing lift, power loss could be one of the things that caused that. The engines could fail for airflow interruption or fuel interruption. The fuel stopped or the fuel was starved to the engine. There are three ways that could happen. I'm going to mention the first one, and we're going to put this first one in the dustbin of history and never bring it up again. Every time I get to the gate and I park the airplane, I starve the engines of fuel to shut them down. We take the fuel control levers and we take them from run and we put them to shut off. That's one of the ways that you can starve an engine of fuel. Do I believe that that happened? No. Listen to me very carefully. I think anybody that suggests that, that's kind of a kooky theory. I'm just simply explaining it as one of the possible ways that fuel could be starved to an engine. I'm not saying that happened, and we're going to take that now and we're going to put it in the dustbin of history, and we're not going to come back to that. The other two now are much more plausible, and you're going to put a big P probable or a little P probable. That's your choice. I'm kind of split evenly between both of these, and one is one we've already talked about, which is fuel contamination. Is it possible that the fuel was contaminated? Yeah, it's always possible. That's something that I'm very concerned about. Fuel contamination would be the fuel in the entire airplane, which would lend itself to the fact that both engines could have failed because of that same contamination. Primarily, we think of water in the fuel, but it doesn't have to be just water. It could be any sort of contaminant. It could be twigs or branches or dirt, enough dirt in the fuel that it would clog up the system so that fuel couldn't get to the engine enough that the engines would starve of fuel and that they would flame out. Now, here's the evidence against that, all right? And let me explain how you would detect fuel contamination and the preventative measures that are put in place. All major airports, large airports where they would fly a 787, the fuel is delivered in pipes under the runway or under the surface, the ramp. And it's delivered and it's already monitored at the source, it's delivered underneath. And then as it comes out in a little portal on the asphalt, a machine is run over and it's plugged in, and it's a very sophisticated machine. It's not just the old fuel truck that comes over and the guy takes a hose out and he just starts pouring. You don't fuel a 787 that way. It goes through these sophisticated machines. Those machines meter out how many liters or how many gallons of fuel that are going into an airplane, where it's going. But most importantly, there are several sensors early on and throughout the entire process that look for contamination, and they will automatically shut off fueling to that aircraft if it detects, and as I've been told from fuelers, and these are all licensed professional fuelers, I've talked to a bunch of them over the years. Remember, 40 years of flying airplanes, you have a lot of conversation with licensed fuelers, and they showed me all the tricks and things that the machine does. It shuts off automatically, I've been told, if it detects even a drop of water. All right, so the airplane wouldn't have even been able to be fueled. But let's say for some reason it got past all the sensors, it got into the airplane, and contaminated fuel was there. You would think at some point where they start up the engines, they taxi out, they're taking the runway, they push those big engines all the way up, and that fuel is really flowing. At some point, they'd have some indication of contaminated fuel. Is it possible that the first indication they got was shortly after rotate when both engines flamed out due to fuel starvation? It's possible. You can determine whether that's a big P possible or a small P possible or not a probable cause at all. But that's one of the ways that an engine can be starved of fuel. The other is the one that's been blowing up my inbox for the last 48 hours, and the one that all of my pilot friends have been asking me to talk about on this. And here we go, folks. They've been asking me to explain to all of you what vapor lock is. Okay. Again, you can big P, small P with vapor lock if you want. There's going to be lots of strong opinions about vapor lock, but we can't exclude vapor lock completely. Now, a lot of folks, let me answer the possible objections about vapor lock before I get into what it is. Some of the objections are, well, that only happens in piston engines, or that only happens in carbureted engines. It doesn't make any difference what type of engine we're talking about. This is something that happens to the fuel before it reaches the engine. So it can happen in a turbine engine, it can happen in a recip, it can happen in a piston engine, carbureted or non-carbureted. It can happen in every type of engine because it's something that happens to the fuel. Now, I've got a great article here. I want to read it to you. I got to put my glasses on because I've been going for about 20 hours straight. My eyes are suffering. But this article is entitled Engine Vapor Lock in Aviation, Symptoms and Prevention Strategies. And it's written by Neil Glazier. And we'll put a link to the entire article in the description below. But I like this article because it's very thorough. It's written in layman's terms, so it's easy to understand. So if you're not a pilot or an engineer or professional, you can read this and understand what vapor lock is. And a big part of what we try to do on this channel is inform and educate so you feel real assured really reassured about flying in airplanes. The more you know about airplanes and how they operate, the more likely you are to get in one and go flying, because they really are safe. But here's what he says, right? O'Neill writes this. He says, this is on the first page. I think it's the second paragraph. He says, vapor lock is a phenomenon that can occur when fuel in the supply lines turns to vapor. So you've got liquid fuel. Remember I mentioned that earlier? It can vaporize. Water can vaporize. When it gets to 212 degrees Fahrenheit, it turns into steam. It vaporizes. Fuel can do the same. It doesn't have to get nearly that hot, by the way. This ends up preventing the fuel pump from being able to deliver liquid fuel to the engine. So a lot of you are going to say, yeah, but those engines, those boost pumps are so strong and they provide boosted fuel to those engines. There's no way this could ever happen. All right, you probably want to give this a little pea possibility. This guy is saying that even if the fuel pump is there, once the fuel itself vaporizes, doesn't make any difference how big a pump you have. You're trying to push vapor, not liquid fuel. That's the whole point. All right. Can this happen? Yeah. Did it happen? Again, this whole thing is 100 billion to one, but just hang with me on this, because you guys asked, you wanted an explanation of vapor lock. The next thing he says on the next page is this. I think it's bullet point number two. This issue is more likely to happen in warm weather. That's important. Or at high altitude, he doesn't say and high altitude, he says or high altitude, because of the reduced air pressure and increased fuel volatility. Now, there are a number of different types of fuels that you can put in airplanes. There is avgas, which is a gasoline type fuel. That's primarily for small airplanes, but it's very much like gasoline. And then there's jet fuel, and there's a whole bunch of different jet fuels. There's Jet A, Jet B, Jet JP4, JP5. There's a whole bunch. That's more of a kerosene type fuel. One fuel, gasoline, has a higher flash point than kerosene does, but all fuel can vaporize given the right set of circumstances. So none of these are excluded from the realm of possibility. He goes on to say, he's what is vapor lock, under the results, he says, hard starts, failed starts, or even engine failure in extreme cases. So vapor lock can cause engine failure in extreme cases. And this case we're looking at in India is extreme. It falls into that category. This is why vapor lock is a big concern for pilots operating in hot weather or at high altitude. He goes on at the bottom, the next page, to say, why does vapor lock happen? He's got five bullet points. Engine heat after shutdown. So maybe if there was a quick turnaround and the engines didn't cool down sufficiently enough, that could have been a contributing factor. Number two, high ambient temperature. I've seen some METAR lines the day of the accident that said it was 43 degrees Celsius. That's almost 110 degrees Fahrenheit. On my airplane, there is a max fuel temperature, and that's 49 degrees Celsius. I can't operate that airplane if I get close to that 49 degrees Celsius. Why? Because of the potential for vapor lock, among other things. There are other things associated, but vapor lock is one of those. So there is an upper end temperature. So let's assume for a minute these pilots didn't reach that upper end temperature, but they were close to it, all right? Number three, altitude effects. They were at sea level, so that's not a real big player. Fuel volatility, all those different jet fuels I mentioned to you, some are more susceptible to vapor locking than others, and we don't know what kind of fuel they got, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. And then quick turnaround flights is the final one. So let's assume for a minute that airplane was sitting out there for a while. They had fueled it. The fuel going in generally is kind of cool when it goes in, but it was a hot day. It's beating down on those wings. The fuel probably warmed up. It's possible it warmed up. They taxi out under 43 degrees Celsius temperatures. Those engines are hot. They're producing heat. The heat's coming underneath the airplane, right? The heat always rises. So it's coming under those wing tanks and the center tank, and it's heating up the fuel. It's making it even warmer. They get out down to this extremely hot runway, and then they push up the power on those burners. Full blast, and you've got the engine is now under as much stress as it's ever going to be. It's producing as much heat as it's ever going to produce on top of that hot runway. All of the elements are there for a potential vapor lock scenario. So can we exclude vapor lock? I don't think so. I think it needs to be included in the discussion. If we were having a hangar conversation around the table, somebody would bring that up and we'd say, yeah, it could have happened, right? And somebody would say, well, that was 100 billion to one. Yep, this whole thing was 100 billion to one. Vapor lock in both engines at the same time. Yep, folks, if it happened in one, you know what? It could happen in the other. And it's kind of apparent at this point that whatever happened to the one, it did happen to the other. So To recap, could have been air starvation into the engine, causing compressor stalls, and somehow the engine's failed. Yeah, that's a possibility. The one we put in the dustbin, we're not going to bring that back again. And then the two are fuel contamination or vapor lock. Now, this is for all of those of you who asked for a discussion about vapor lock. There it is. It's a rudimentary discussion for sure. Love to hear from you engineers and you pilots in the comments. Let me say something about the comments before I wrap this up. Be nice in the comments, folks. I know there's a lot of emotions running high about this. We want to have a nice discussion about this. If you want to make a point, then back up your point and be nice about it. I would love to engage with you on that. I learn a lot. I learn as much as you do. I love the idea of a forum out over YouTube and out in the community of pilots getting together to talk about these things. I think the general public deserves that. I think people that are fearful to get on airplanes deserve us having civilized and respectful conversations about all of this. And so I intend to have that respectful, trust-endearing conversation about all of this while I do put out all of the things that could potentially be there. They're all connected to something solid that we know for sure. So with all that being said, this is your update. This has been a refinement of some of the things that are possible. And for all of you that asked me to talk about vapor lock, there it is. There's a basic level, entry level discussion of vapor lock. You can decide whether it's big P, small P. I'm not leaning in either direction. It could have been fuel contamination. It's possible it could have been this as well. And we open the door wide open to the fact that it could be something else. I'm eager for some preliminary finding to come out. I'm just hoping that it offer some clarity and we don't get a preliminary finding that leaves us just as empty as kind of where we are now. But folks, thanks for joining me in the discussion today. I hope this is some reassurance to you. I just want to reiterate one more time. It is absolutely safe to fly. Good old Captain Steve is getting in an airplane in a few days. And I'm going to go to good old Paris, France. I love that place. I'd love to have you come and join me. Well, that's it for now. As details offer themselves up, we'll come back and we'll update as necessary. Now you know. I'm Captain Steve. Fly safe.